I'm Dr. Don McDonald. Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse, the podcast. I believe one of the most valuable things you can give yourself as a chiropractor is taking time. Time to become more inspired, present, and focused. Weekly, I'll be bringing you stories of triumph, mindset shifts, and lessons from people who are breaking through their limitations. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Now, let's get started.
Welcome, everybody, to Breaking the Underdog Curse. You may wonder, where is the sexy radio voice of Dr. Dawn? Well, today you have the beauty behind the brains. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. The marginal beauty behind the brains.
Of Breaking. Oh, come on. It's amazing beauty behind the brains.
Breaking the Underdog Curse. My name is Brandy McDonald, and I am Dr. Dawn McDonald's wife, partner in crime, business partner, life partner, best friend. And today we've switched the tables because I think it's time for all of the listeners and subscribers to learn a little bit about the brains and the ultimate underdog, Dr. Dawn McDonald. And so therefore, I am going to interview Dr. Dawn. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me on your podcast.
Well, it's technically your podcast, but for a period of time, it'll be mine.
This is like fun role-playing in marriage, right? Well, a role-switching or something.
Okay, I wouldn't say role-playing. Oh, my God. Sometimes you say the most inappropriate thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, let's try and stick to the point here.
Okay.
So, let's talk. We have a really interesting timing of the, at least recording of the podcast. It'll come out a bit later than this, but this weekend marked a big anniversary for us. It was 9 years that we've been in our third location in chiropractic. We had a first location, which is a little office, and we outgrew that. Then we built a big custom built office. And then 9 years ago, we left that and moved to our new location. And I think over the 18 years of chiropractic that you've been involved and I've been involved in the practice, I did meet you when you first opened the first week of practice, you've probably had lots of underdog stories. So I thought it'd be interesting for the listeners to really listen to the Coles Notes version, in case they haven't read your book, of what those last 18 years have been like, because you really have, they're really in sections, right? There's the first 7 years of chiropractic, and then what happened when I came into the office, and then what happened when the office imploded, and then what happened when we went to our new location, all the way to what's going on for us today. So why don't you give everybody a bit of a Coles Notes version of that?
Oh, wow. That's like huge. Like
what Coles Notes means, short.
Short. You'll just cut me off if I start rambling too much, right?
Exactly.
So, I think probably one of the first ones was just after I graduated chiropractic school. Like I had a tough time through chiropractic school. I've always had a challenge in school. And it's probably just the worthiness. I remember even when I decided to be a chiropractor back at Red Deer College and I switched into science, I remember going to my first chemistry class and we had to wear the lab jacket. And I put the lab jacket on and look at myself in the mirror and I couldn't believe that I was like, I look so fancy with the goggles on. And like the goggles on and my lab jacket. And I just looked in the mirror going, holy, I think I've totally made it. And I didn't even go to my first class yet. So I think that's just, sometimes, you know, there's the external underdog and the internal underdog. And I was totally the internal underdog in my brain because everybody on the outside was like, what are you talking about? Everybody loves Dawn. Like you're a white male, fairly good looking. What do you have to
athletic
think?
Guy. Yeah.
You play sports. Yeah. Like why the heck would you ever be like an underdog? And that's not what was running in my head. So yeah. that was the very first thing. And I just remember just looking at myself going, holy cow, I'm like so fancy. I'm like, and I look like, maybe at that point I said, I look like a doctor or something. Like I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy.
Actually, you're right. I probably should have started way before 18 years ago because I don't know if people haven't read your book wouldn't know that all the way till you were almost 12, you couldn't read. And so why don't you talk a little bit about how you adapted and compensated to what at the time they called learning disability and our favorite word of all, attention deficit disorder, but you had learned externally how to compensate, you know, school and teachers thought that you should be doing.
Yeah. In grade one and kindergarten, books were easy to read because they had pictures. And so if you had pictures, it was awesome because I could just make up the story. And so I'd go through the book and I'd loop through the book and I'd be like, hey, this little frog, he went to this town and they hung out and they had friends. And then he like did something bad and got in trouble. And then he learned this lesson and then everyone was happy. And so that would be like, oh, good, you read. And then we had the little reading railroad where like every time you read a book.
Well, I love the reading railroad.
Yeah. And so I was just rocking up that until suddenly I got a book that had no pictures.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they had no pictures, I was in serious trouble. So, and actually, they actually waited quite late to not have pictures because yeah. By the time they didn't have pictures and then they realized I couldn't read, I seriously was way, way behind that point. And so, yeah, that was pretty traumatizing for me because again, as being a chronic people pleaser, to be put in that situation where you get made fun of from other kids or teachers look down on you and say, I can't believe you don't know how to read is devastating. Right. And so there's many times I went home crying with my report card to my mom. And the funny thing is though, is that just, I'd want to change, but then I just get distracted because I just want to hang out with my friends or hang out with people. So I just get distracted and then I wouldn't want to study and put in the work. So it wasn't until they made me go to the special class. Like in our small town, it was in Grand Cache, we had two elementary schools. And one was called Sheldon Coates, which is where I lived. And the other one was the Grand Cache Elementary School, which was up the hill. And in our little Sheldon Coates, we just had like one grade one class and one grade two class. And I think it was either grade two or grade three that I had to go in the special class. And I had to go to the other school to the special class.
Yeah.
And that was not cool.
Yeah.
For me, that was totally not cool. So most of my motivation to learn how to read was moving away from, because I just didn't want to be segregated away from my friends.
Yeah. So let's now Cole's note version. Let's take a kid who really couldn't read, was told he had ADHD. Your parents said, no, your mom in particular said, absolutely not. My kid is not going to a different class. You're going to keep him in the class and we're going to entertain him and teach him how to read and worked with you at night. And you had a whole bunch of that stuff going on and you were always, so it started to form kind of how you viewed yourself, right? And then you put on that lab jacket at Red Deer College for the kid that couldn't read and wasn't going to make it in school. Now you're in college. And ultimately, you actually graduate chiropractic. You do an undergrad. You graduate chiropractic college. You fail Canadian boards 3 times. You drive a Pepsi truck for 2 years. And then you open your first practice. And it's day one in chiropractic and it's day one in business. And so talk a little bit about now that evolution over the last 18 years.
Well, that first thing was frightening because, we're just working. We have a new grad, Curtis, who's just starting with us, who just got out of school, a very vitalistic school in New Zealand, where their requirements are very high to get a lot of outpatient adjustments in. And can you imagine that I just took 2 years, basically took me 2 years from the time I graduated until I actually could get my license. And then I go into practice and my adjusting confidence is like at about zero.
Yep.
And so the first thing I do is I say, I need to take a technique seminar because I need to brush up on my technique. So I go to a Pettibon seminar and we've just already opened our clinic and it was actually Burl Pettibon that was teaching the class. Cool. And he basically said that if you don't do my technique, you're going to wreck everybody and nothing's going to work because the only thing that works is what I do. And you have to buy all my equipment or else nothing's going to work. So that didn't help. I learned a couple things in that I still use today. I still use my negative Z and I still love that. But I was like, that was a little bit frightening. So basically you just go in scared, shitless.
Yep.
And take it day by day.
So with practice number one was this little tiny practice, which you outgrew relatively quickly. And then what?
Then we moved to it was actually interesting in our strip mall. They had a movie theater that the movie theater closed and they had one movie theater spot that was at the very back of the building that had no signage. Like basically you're facing a back alley, but they offered us to have that spot to build us out. And they gave us a pretty good deal to build that out. So it was 27, almost 2,800 square feet, big open adjusting room with 3 private rooms on the side and a bunch of rooms for massage therapists and other kind of stuff. We had our own office, our own bathroom. Like it was
staff kitchen, laundry.
Yeah, it was a swanky office. So yeah. we moved over into there. And I think it was, I think I was there for about a couple of years before I begged and pleaded you to come in the office, I think.
Yeah. Well, by then I think 7 years have gone by. So 2 years in the first location, probably close to five in that bigger location, four maybe. And seven years, fast forward, go by in practice. And how's it going?
Oh, you know, I'm just trying other things because chiropractic things just like a little bit too hard. So, so I'm checking out like multi-level marketing stuff, and I'm checking out real estate stuff, and I'm especially manifesting stuff. I was really like, I'd love to have figured out the manifesting stuff, so I didn't have to do anything. I was just going to sit there and like meditate or hum or vibrate at the right frequency, and everything was going to come the way I'd love. But. Oh, and I love planning stuff too. We love planning stuff.
Oh yeah. And how did that work out for you?
Well, we had some great plans that never got done.
How did the manifesting stuff work out for you without doing anything?
Not that great of results, right? We just, it was just hopeful, but I just never actually got any traction. So it was kind of, it was a pretty frustrating time.
Yeah. So Brandy comes into the office. We've been dating for 7 years. I think we're engaged at this point. I don't think we had been married yet. I can't remember. It's been so long ago. Time flies.
Yeah, I know. I think we were married. I think we were married.
No, I moved back from Bakerville. I don't think we had been married quite yet, but I think we were engaged. And yeah. So remember we lived in that little apartment behind the office, this tiny little, we were so excited. It was a 3-bedroom apartment and it was like fancy.
Yes.
We really lived in anything so fancy before.
Yep.
We rented that 3-bedroom.
Well, especially from the year before, because you're living in Bakerville and I was working 4 days a week in Edmonton and 2 days a week in Bakerville. And so I'd stay a day at my sister's house. And then the rest of that year, like I was actually homeless.
Yeah.
Like I was seriously homeless.
Yeah.
So I basically like for a whole year, just drove back and forth, worked 6 days a week. Yeah. And that's how I survived. Right.
And then 7 years after that, you say, just come in for a few months. So I come into the office and the next 2 years begin in that particular location.
Yeah. And that totally blew up. That was the huge thing. And I think people who've heard our story know that like one of the biggest challenges I had was hiring and finding the right people to support my personality, because I'm more of a amiable personality, or we call it a lab in my book, The Underdog Curse. And so I'm super externally influenced. So I really need to have some good anchors that are close to me, especially at the beginning. Because I think when a lab is starting into a new endeavor, I think anybody, it's easy to default back into old settings. But if you're not surrounded with the right people, you default way back faster. So I just kind of innately knew that if I had you in the office, that would just, because I'd never actually experienced a great office. And I wasn't smart like a lot of these young guys coming out, like Curtis, who observed like 20 or 30 offices. I basically went to Dr. Dwayne Smethers, who's my chiropractor, and then Dr. Ken Berkowitz, who's the chiropractor in my hometown. And I really probably only observed in two offices. Like I didn't even, like it's, I look back and I'm like, are you kidding me? But I didn't even do anything. So I didn't even know what it looked like.
Yeah.
So we had to create it from nothingness.
But you knew it wasn't what it was. So you knew something was missing. So how did you know something was missing?
Well, for one, I had no money.
Let's rephrase that. We
had no money
other than my check from my full-time job that I couldn't leave.
Well, we're rocking because I think you're making $17 an hour. So I
think at the high end, I was making $17 an hour. So it was awesome. We were
so, and we could probably, we could go for dinner like once in a while, like for a splurge. Like
as long as we kept the money in the envelopes. Remember, we had to keep the cash in the envelopes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially because, you know, my family background was a lot of times we were in debt. So we're used to being in debt. So for me, that was normal. And in your family growing up, you guys only bought stuff if you had the cash. And so that was an interesting learning as well, is I was like, well, that was what I said. Minus 1500 was my zero in my overdraft. Yeah. Right. So I was always in my overdraft.
So other than the obvious financial lack, was that it? Was that the only thing that was missing at that time for you?
No, I think it was just the fulfillment of just knowing that you could make a bigger impact. And again, I was in love with chiropractic, right? So right as soon as I could, I became president of the Edmonton Chiropractic Society. And I remember on my, I think in the first month that I was a chiropractor, they were looking for a committee that was going to negotiate with Alberta Healthcare, because at the time they were paying a little tiny smidgy amount to come in to get a check. So you get $12 of your visit up to a maximum of $200. And they're looking for a committee of chiropractors that would volunteer to help do the negotiation with the government. And I volunteered, and I was like seriously in practice for like 3 weeks.
Yep.
And Les Shaw, who was the president at the time, I went to the meeting, and after the meeting, I've never been cut from a committee so nicely in my life before, where he said, "Oh, I just really appreciate your enthusiasm, but like you need to go build your practice before you get involved in everything like this." And I was like, "Oh," I felt all sad and left.
Yeah.
But I still didn't go and build my practice. But yeah, I always wanted to help other chiropractors. I loved the whole idea of chiropractic, especially like the whole underdog profession.
Yeah.
And I hated that people were like, you know, taking pot shots at it. And I always felt like it was just, there's an injustice being made.
Yeah.
But I was never breaking through that in my own practice. And that was super frustrating. And like I said, two pivotal moments happened. Our talk we had at the Sheraton Eau Claire, downtown Calgary.
Yep.
Which sometimes I exaggerate it and make it sound worse than it was, but it was pretty traumatizing to me, where in my words or in my mind, basically said like, you have such a bigger capacity to serve on a higher level that like to see you squander your potential, I don't know if I can stay in this relationship when you are like shooting on two cylinders out of your possible eight.
Well, that's a nicer way to put it than what I've heard in the past.
Well, I've gotten in trouble so many times for saying it the bad way. Like, you're a loser and I'm leaving you.
Yeah, because that's exactly what I said.
No, but that's what it felt like.
Yeah. Yeah. Because what you were feeling at that time was not just financially were we struggling. It was, you could see, you loved chiropractic. See, when I met you, you loved chiropractic. And it started to become almost a dreading of chiropractic over the next 7 years of that office. And because you just dreaded going to work, and you dreaded, like, it was just too much work. That's why you were looking for external things to fulfill you, and inventing things and network marketing and you name it, you found it. Cause it would give you a bit of a high for a period of time, but then it wouldn't last and you'd be looking for the next best thing. And that was not the guy that I'd met 7 years previous, right in practice, where you loved chiropractic and you loved the potential of what it could do for people. And then it became not that for you.
Well, I think too, just feeling you're not good at something.
Yeah.
Long enough, you don't want to do it. You feel like you don't want to do it anymore, right? It's just like a sport. If you're horrible at a sport, like, usually it's not that fun.
Well, and on that note, let's talk about that, because when I met you, you hadn't read a book other than, because you just graduated from college. You're like, I will never pick up another book again, because why? You avoided reading because of what happened to you as a kid. And it was always a challenge for you to read. So it got you through university, got you through chiropractic college, but then you're like, I'm never reading again. And the very first, one of the first trips we went to, remember we went to the public library with my library card. And
yeah.
I think you took out a book. And what was the first book you took out?
It was called Multiple Streams of Income with Robert Allen.
That's right.
And it was hilarious because you're like, go pick a book out. And I'm like, oh, I don't really want to pick out a book. I haven't read a book since I finished my board exams. And you know what? I think during that 7 years, everything seemed like such a price that I lost any vision of what the promise was.
Yeah.
And so everything just seemed like too much of a price because I didn't even have a clear vision on the promise. And reading that book kind of opened my mind again to, you know what? I remember back when I was in basketball, if I went to a basketball school or a basketball camp, I got way better. I remember if I played basketball against better guys than me, I got way better. I can learn from other people just because we didn't have that many hugely successful people we hung out with at that time either. Right. Like, so I didn't observe busy, successful offices. So I didn't even know what the promise was.
Yeah.
So any price seemed too much. Right. And so I think that was the first, thing to get me dreaming again. Right.
Yeah.
To create that dream and that excitement about what potentially could happen if I could get my act together.
Right. So we did. So we blew it up. So came in over the next 2 years, you'd go on like more than triple your practice. And so let's talk about that, because a lot of people today, you and I both work with chiropractors, and we both, the number one thing everybody wants to do is grow their practice. And there's always that sense, and the sense that probably we had was like, when I, then I, like, then then we're going to have made it. Then we're going to have like got there and all that feeling of less than an underdog. And it's going to go away because now we've got this huge, massive practice that we've grinded to build. And so we were sure that that was going to be it. And instead, what happened?
Well, the first thing that will kick in is also now feeling guilty because there's other people you know and friends and family and stuff that aren't as successful as you are. And then now I feel guilty that I shouldn't even deserve this.
Yeah.
And that's when some self-sabotage starts kicking in. And then the other thing is always wanting to be supported and having everybody love each other and everybody to totally get along. And yeah, when you came in the office, I was in practice with my sister and, our communication was never good. Right. And we were kind of more superficial. We're both kind of people pleasers. So I think and again, it was with good intent in mind that we didn't want to hurt each other's feelings. But by trying to do whatever we could not to do anything or not to say anything that would hurt someone else's feelings, you'll actually end up even lying. And so, I found myself, they were starting to develop strife in the office and I was feeling like I was the buffer between you and my sister. And I was very elaborate at all the ways that I was going to try to get this to work. The only problem was that pushed it down the road so far that certain things happened that would never have made it the same again. And I think, and that was one of my biggest learnings too, is that, not everyone's always going to get along and you're not always going to get supported, but at the end of the day, you're still going to be okay. Cause I thought that if people all didn't get along, like I was going to die or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where I had that from, but I just thought like I had to do whatever was in my power to make sure everybody is on the same page. And that's exhausting because everybody has different values. Everybody has different things. And even when you're talking with other people's relationships, like you're not included in another person's relationship. So how to think that you have the power over it, most of the time you're just going to make things worse.
Yeah. And at the detriment of yourself, your vision, your health, your mission, mm-hmm. your fulfillment, just to make peace.
Yep.
So we got there, we arrived, we built this huge practice. And then obviously this weekend, 9 years ago, it all blew up and we left. So
yes.
We started a new chapter and we were saying yesterday was really the anniversary of that. We were saying, remember we left with this sense that of, okay, now it's going to be better. It's so funny in business where you have all these moments and you're like, okay, well now this is going to be better. Well, now I'm going to grow practice. Now it's going to be better. Now I'm going to do this. It's going to be better. Now I'm going to do this. It's going to be better. Because everything at that point for us was all about achieving an end outcome.
Yep.
And if we got there or did that, then all the strife and trauma we felt would totally be better. I think that's what we thought. So yep. We left. And we went to Southside Chiropractic. And how did that go?
Well, it was exciting. The first day we opened up, we're like, wow, this is kind of cool. I almost felt like I was back at college looking at myself in the mirror with my lab jacket on and my goggles in the mirror. Because I was like, wow, like I have my own clinic. Like I have my own office, right? We have our own office. And that quickly went away when our phones didn't work and we didn't have a website yet. And we had a brand new phone number. We didn't have our own phone number and people couldn't get a hold of us. And, you know, like we said, we opened up with all that excitement and each week our numbers were just plummeting. And I remember one time and just to see the frustration too, because I felt so bad because I knew I hurt you and I hurt my family by making everybody try to get along for so long. And just to see your disappointment and your tears when I can't remember who it was, but someone came in the door and they're all just frustrated. They go, oh, this is where you are. That was when we finally figured out our phones weren't working. Cause we're like, nobody's phoning. And they said, I've been trying to call you for like the last like 5 days. And it just
goes nowhere.
What did I say? It just went nowhere. Yeah. It had no place to check. Or it did have a mailbox, but I think it was already full, and we didn't know how to check it or, oh, it was something crazy.
Yeah.
And so just to see, just all that was just like, it was stressful leading up to the breakaway from our previous clinic. And then it was stressful to move.
Yeah.
And then it just like, at that point I felt like, you know, can I can't even take anymore. Like, this is just too crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you were burnt out. And so what happened was not just frustration mentally, but you burned all your health out, really not in the move, like leading up to the move and then the move and then what happened after the move. And so then it became more of just an underdog curse problem. Now you actually had a physiological breakdown of your system that had been in that state of, as we call it in chiropractic, sympathetic dominance for so long, which was all run by your thought process.
Yeah, which has been building for years and years.
Yeah.
And then again, I all this time I played basketball all the way up to this time. And with the move, I could tell like my energy was low. And so I was starting to miss some of my men's basketball games. And then when I was there, I wasn't into it. And I remember like just before I tore the cartilage right off my index finger. Right. And I had like one of my busiest days I've ever had with my first finger just like blown up like crazy, trying to adjust like with my other fingers.
Yeah.
And then like seriously about a month later, I hadn't played for 2 weeks. And then we had a basketball game on a Sunday morning and I just rolled out of bed exhausted, went to the game. We had no subs, played the whole game and blew up my knee. Yeah. And tore cartilage in my knee. And then after that, now I wasn't even exercising. Cause I couldn't even walk on my leg for a year. And again, as a people pleaser, none of my practice members even knew that I was hurt because I was just like faking it the whole time.
Yeah.
But holy cow, at the end of the day of faking it the whole time, trying to be there for your people. Yeah, I was toast.
Yeah. And you were fatigued the whole time because really before we left the first clinic, you were already in adrenal failure. And then that just got worse and worse and worse and worse. So yeah. The rebuild of that took how long? When we finally, as I call it on Facebook, I said we finally had to bitch slap ourselves. So that took about a year for us to bitch slap ourselves of thinking that we were never going to recover from that and lots of anger and
resentment. And I forgot too, one of the things too is that as president of the MTK Chiropractic Society, during this whole time when we're rebuilding in the first year or two of the new place, I look back now and I think I was distracting myself from the pain. I put on 7 seminars in Edmonton for the president of the MTK Chiropractic Society in 1 year, including bringing Jack Canfield and Fabrizio Mancini into the Windspear Center where we had 1,000 people. Don't get me wrong. We did a lot of amazing things because we still kept the practice at a really good volume. And I still did a whole buttload of stuff for the profession, but it was absolutely at a huge detriment to my health. Yeah. And it wasn't until Michael Hall, you know, we started bringing Michael Hall up and he suggested that I get a salivary cortisol check just to see what's going on. And when I got my results back, I was flatlined. I was done. Like I had nothing left in the tank. And that took about 2 years.
Yes.
I think to overcome.
So there's the Cole's Notes version, which took more than Cole's Notes to get to. And here we are today.
It's only a lifetime of trauma.
Now you can see if you've not read the book, why you have to actually read the book, because you cannot do it in a 45-minute pod or to an hour podcast. It just is not going to happen. But I think the underlying theme is, well, there's twofold. First of all, it took 2 years to get some semblance of some really basic health function back so that you have the strength. We talk about this all the time in a practice. So let's just first talk about that. We talk about what people talk a lot about balance. And we got this young guy in our office, and I know you and I are working with some young people right now that are just brand new in practice. And I don't know where along the lines it happened in our profession and maybe in other businesses. Maybe it's the advent of Silicon Valley and apps and online marketing and side hustles that all of a sudden it seems to be that you don't really need to work that hard and that you should be able to balance this 15-hour beautiful work week with all your hobbies and your partners. And so that's really been something we've seen with a lot of our young people. And so, you know, I think we should talk about that the perception of balance, but also not doing what we did at the expense of your health. Mm-hmm. What does it take to really, because three times now in 18 years, we've basically reinvented ourselves in chiropractic. And every time it's been the same thing, which has been what?
Oh, what's been what?
What's been the one thing?
reinvent ourselves?
Yeah. What have we had to do to reinvent ourselves three times?
Work hard.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I thought you were telling the secret. I'm like,
oh, no, you're like, telling the secret.
Yeah. No, it was just working hard. But you know, like, it's funny because in a lot of my podcasts that I've been doing, if I'm interviewing people that in practice for about the same time I have, we really focus the conversation on balance. Mm. But if you're talking to someone who's in the first 5 years of practice, you got to work your ass off. Like, we were talking about this yesterday, I think too. It's still super important to keep your health and your body and your adjustments and that in line. But you do realize you're going to go off balance. Like I said, I think the first 2 years I worked 6 days a week. Like that's just what you do to be able to kind of get things going. And I could have cut the learning curve a lot more if I got mentorship and all that stuff, but I think that's the thing, is you gotta really put in the time at the beginning. But there's gotta be a time where you don't just have that create a habit that eventually that destroys your health.
Like a pattern.
A pattern, yeah.
Well, and I think not even if you're young in practice, though. Look at the people we've worked with who have been 15, 20 years in practice, and they've never been able to really get traction. It's a different type of work. And so I don't know that it's so much that it's even young people. It's if you're trying to really either reinvent yourself or get traction or build the business, it is a lot of work. And it's not that you have to kill yourself. Like, I do think you just have to be even more vigilant. I think what we didn't do, and part of why that loss of health, first of all, we had no awareness of it. I think we had zero awareness that would have destroyed. We didn't even know what adrenals were, let's be honest.
So yeah, totally.
We wouldn't have known that was, you had all these signs at the first clinic, second clinic, that was all run by the way you were thinking. We just didn't know it because we had no mentorship on it. And who would ever talk to us about something like that? And you lied. You lied to your coaches. You lied to people. It was like the books. You just lied. You were looking.
I'm good. It's all good.
I'd hear you talk to your coaches and I'd say, you have got to tell them the truth. And you lied about it. And so we just had no idea that there were going to be these signs and symptoms. It was too much. And you were not doing what you need to do to take care of yourself. So I think people do have to balance it to some degree in the sense that they have to be vigilant, but there's no such thing as a real finite balance, which is very little work and lots of reward.
Well, no. And I think too, and I've too coached a few guys like this as well, where, you know, maybe 10, 15 years in practice, they've ran into a bunch of trauma or, you know, big issues that have really put them down. And they're in that same situation I was. The difference was that my practice was still good. Yeah. I was broken.
Yeah.
A lot of the chiropractors I talked to, their practice is not good and they're broken.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge, because you need to really, then you have to focus on your body.
Yes.
Because you need to focus on your body and then focus on the one or two things that are going to make the biggest difference in your practice, because you don't have enough reserves to be able to rehaul everything right off the bat.
So let's talk about the one thing, because that's one of our favorite things ever. And I know that you've interviewed him for the podcast. So let's talk about, because you talk often about what's the one thing that's going to make the biggest impact in your practice or in your life, whatever it is that somebody's trying to do. So what is that concept?
Well, and I think it's falling back in love with chiropractic. Because, you know, I've seen this in the past where even for myself, I can say the same words to someone, say on a report of findings, and I'm totally exhausted. Or I can say the same words, but I'm jumped up and I'm excited with the energy. And it's a huge change in the results based on what you're putting behind it. So the emotion that you're putting behind it. So, you know, whether you want to call it gratitude or going back to, one of the things that helped me with Tony Robbins too, is he tries to bring you back to a time in your life that you were on fire and on purpose. And for me, that was basketball. And there's games where I was like, just give me the ball. This is liquid Drano, baby. Like, I am on fire. And for my personality, that never happens ever.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Right. So I'm just like, and I'm like, and like you said, when you watch me play basketball, I'm like elbowing guys in the head. Yeah. I'm like ramming them. I'm like, you want some? Let's go. I'm like totally fight everybody.
Totally. Right.
So I go back into my mind and then go back into that state.
Yeah.
So everybody has a state that they've had back in their life where they've been on fire at something, like something they got to grab that they did really well. You take that mindset and then bring it in. I think that was one of the things. Besides, again, it depends what's the biggest issue in your practice, right? If your retention's horrible, you got to work on something to do with retention. If your new patients are horrible, you got to get new people in the office, but focusing on the one or two things instead of focusing on too many things.
So in that period of time when you were so broken, like you were hurt, your adrenals didn't work, you're exhausted all the time, how hard would it have been for you to go to that place where you were on fire in basketball?
It wouldn't have been hard.
No.
Like in my mind.
Yeah.
Because it's such a good memory.
Yeah.
Like you go back, you can remember it instantly, right? You just have to bring the awareness to it. Like, and then again, when I think it was either Leadership Academy or something, Tony Robbins, like, how did you stand? Mm-hmm. How did you talk? How did you move? How were your body movements, right? How were you breathing? And then you can just go right back to those times. But I just didn't know how to do that then. Like, I didn't even know that was possible. So I was just like, oh, I'm so tired.
Yeah. Totally. And hurt.
Yeah, I knew, and it was, and it's tough. I don't know anyone else there's practiced hurt before, but man,
I think lots of chiropractors have practiced hurt.
Yeah,
because that's what are you going to do, especially if you have no freedom, no locum, no associate. You got to go in. You got people there. It's not a 9-to-5 job that you can just take time off when you don't feel good.
It doesn't
work that way.
Yeah.
So especially if you're physically hurt. So let's talk about perseverance, because that's my favorite. That's my favorite word, because I think when a lot of people hear your story, they may or may not know about your childhood and all the stuff that you've been through. I mean, it's all in the book, but it's also in chiropractic. I know our social media following really knows a lot about our perseverance, but I only use that word now in retrospect. At the time, I did not feel like we were persevering. So let's talk about perseverance. Like, what does that mean? Like, not like what's a meme about it? Like, persevere and better things shall come. Like, I don't mean that. I mean, what like
all good things come to those who wait.
Yeah, totally. Like, what does that actually mean to you? Like, what does perseverance mean?
I just think that there's it makes it that there's no other option. I just think no other option. Like, one of the things that really hit home was Macaulay, the president of Parker, after Fabricio. One of the Parkers, he talked about the story about Nadal, the tennis player. And what they did is they're doing some research about most tennis players. And at the peak, this was when he was just rocking it all the time. They made an observation that with other tennis players, when an opponent scored a point on them, their body language and everything dropped down. And then they felt bad themselves and they kind of almost gave up. And Nadal was the exact opposite. Is anytime someone scored a point on him, he actually perked up and was like, yeah, you want something? Like, are you kidding me? Like, it actually elevated his state.
Yeah.
And I think over time, that is what I've just subconsciously developed in life, is that if there's a problem, we're going to fix it. Like, there's going to be a solution and we're going to just keep chipping at it from any different angle until that sucker's going to be done. And I had to learn that too from my, my board exams, when you basically have to write them 4 times and each time, it doesn't matter what you do, you fail by the same amount each time. You know, you have 2 options. You either just like give up and fail, or else you just say, like, screw it. I'm giving her until there's no time to give it anymore.
Yeah. Suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's just like, there's always a way. Like, I still think that there's always a way.
Yeah.
We just haven't figured out the right way, or I'm big into, maybe I just need resources. So, you know, that's why I'm a huge opponent, or I'm huge about getting to surround yourself with people who have done what you're trying to do, so that you can figure out and make a shortcut, or else at least get some tips to get you more excited to get to that goal.
Well, this is sort of a sidebar, but there's lots of research on hope and hopelessness in people's health conditions outside of chiropractic and psychosocial research. And what they know is that people that will heal from chronic disease or conditions that medicine has said to them, which of course not the premise we live in, but medicine has said, you're never going to get better. The difference is the perseverance, that they will believe that there will always be a solution. Well, they may not have found it yet, but they will do whatever it takes to find it.
Well, and I think, I think I learned that from my parents, because when my sister first decided she wanted to be a chiropractor. And then after I was under care for a year, I'm like, and I knew it was going to be super hard financially. And I had to say to my parents, I would like to be a chiropractor too. And they seriously didn't have the financial means to do it. And they said, well, we have no idea how we're going to do it. And so if you guys have to go like one semester at a time, we're just going to bootstrap it and see what we can do. And it, like we were able to go through the whole thing. Like, yeah. Like that's a huge, that was a huge learning for me.
Yeah.
That even when you have no clue how you're going to do it, if you have a big enough why behind it, that you're going to become resourceful and be able to figure out a way.
And I think your dad was an entrepreneur, and the true entrepreneurs, which is, I think, don't think we teach enough of this in chiropractic, which is why we think it's about balance, is that the true entrepreneur that starts with nothing and builds empires has only done it because they will do whatever it takes, however much it takes. There will always be a solution.
For however long it takes.
Yeah. Which is pretty cool. So you always ask people at the end of your podcast, what do you think some one thing that people would need to know, or what's your bit of advice for people, or if they're having a similar story, what would you leave them with? So I'm going to ask you the same thing.
Okay. Well, and I'll be like other people. Oh, I don't know what, I have nothing to say. No, you know what? I love chiropractic. And I just love because for me, it's the principle of it, right? It's that universal principle that we are all wonderful and we're all great. We just have limitations or subluxations that are holding us back from being the person or the chiropractor or having the health that we truly deserve. And it breaks my heart to see chiropractors out there just covered. Like they're like a light. I would say they're like a light bulb just covered in shit.
Yes.
We just need to clean that stuff off. And so my plea to chiropractors out there that aren't doing, well, or having challenges with what's going on, is get around to other chiropractors. Like that's just that I never did that at first. Like, that's so key. Get to seminars. Now we have podcasts. I never had podcasts when I listened to audio books, and my whole wall, I got a new vehicle that doesn't have a CD player. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have like thousands and thousands of dollars of audio CDs. Now what am I going to listen to? And that's when I discovered podcasts. I'm like, wow, there's podcasts. So Tony Robbins talks about the three, right? We got immersion with seminars. We have coaching. And then we have either reading books or daily audio programs where you're continually to feed your mind. Read a book to get you inspired. I think everyone just needs to get re-inspired, which John DeMartini said always is the opposite of being tired. So if we're tired, we're not inspired. So please find something that fires up your inspiration, because that is the fuel that will get that you need to be able to do the damn work to be able to get the results. That's about it.
That's all. Just get a book, go to a seminar, get a coach, be inspired. That's it. Nothing really.
Nothing. No, there's lots of stuff, but that's what I'd say top of mind.
Because really, we could probably have 15 of these podcasts and break apart every story of perseverance and overcoming the curse, because that's pretty much been your entire life, which was the inspiration for the book, inspiration for the podcast. Today, you coach. We have seminars. We have online programs. We have a thriving full office, and we need help there, which is why we got a young guy. I mean, we've got the office that we always imagined, which was never about the office. It was always about the input that we did to get to where we are today, and the kind of office we run with the people we see and the way we practice chiropractic. So it's a hell of a lot different than it was 18 years ago. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, it's a totally. And again, it's kind of sounds somber, right? When we talk about all the trauma, it sounds somber, but that's what gives it the juice. You always have to have the opposites, right? Without the trauma, you can't really feel the victory, unfortunately. Yeah. Right. So when you're in a trauma state, just realize it's just like new practice members when they're under care. When you're doing really well, don't think you're done.
Yeah.
When things are really horrible, don't think you've gone back to stage one and you're back and everything's going to crap. Just realize that life is going to be that little in flux all the time.
And I think, and I hope anyways, that what your podcast does and your book and the way we hopefully present to the world is it's all about possibility. Because really, honestly, we're not unique, even though people think that maybe we are. We're not. We're the same. Our stories are the same. Everybody might have different variations of it. We're just willing to talk about it and talk about, the embarrassment of some of the stuff that we've done and how we felt when we felt the way we felt. But I think that the honesty of that, which for you, the ultimate underdog who lied for so many years to so many people, has to be somewhat freeing as well.
Oh, 100%. And I just think back as if I could go back and talk to that 18 or 19 year old Don looking at himself in the mirror in the lab jacket with the googly goggles on. And I'll be like, dude, we did it. Like, and I'd be super proud of what we've done right now, despite all the embarrassing and all the trauma that we've been through. I'm super proud of what we've done. And also tell people out there, it's super important to have an amazing wife or amazing husband, because I think when in Napoleon Hill's, one of his books, he said the number one mastermind you can have is in your marriage.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to be surrounded by, well, hopefully if you hang out with them very much, but your spouse, if you like them. And that's my number one mastermind. So when you have the number one person in your life who is supportive of what you do, that is an also huge thing. So I want to thank you, honey, because that you're a huge part to all of that.
Well, I think that's a lovely way to end the podcast, frankly.
We should say it again.
No. On that note, and then I'll come downstairs and give you $5 for that after. On that note, I think people will learn a lot from this. Hopefully, they will learn from our stories more than our information, because I think that's how we relate to the world, is through our life stories. And the information is incidental, because we can get information anywhere. So thank you for sharing your wisdom. Thank you for creating the podcast. And with that, everybody, crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.